and the meditations of our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Sometimes we talk about people and their basic worldview as being the glass is half full or the glass is half empty. I grew up in a family with a rather depressive father who saw the world as the glass is broken and leaking rapidly. But I tell that because essentially the reading from Isaiah today poses a situation where, in fact, all of the people of Israel journeying slowly but problematically towards the promised land have begun to see the world as half empty at best. And the words of the prophet, I think, are meant to restore their hope and are very expressive of a glass half full or better kind of worldview. Say to those who are of a fearful heart, be strong, do not fear. Here is your God. He will come with vengeance, with terrible recompense. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. For water shall break forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. Indeed, there is reason for hope, because there are positive things awaiting us, and God, through Moses, has just reassured you. Which brings me to our second reading, the reading from the letter of James. The letter essentially is addressing the issue of favoritism in one of the churches. That is, the congregation had a way of warmly welcoming the rich and being rather indifferent to the poor, of celebrating with those who have food already and not being very generous with those who really need food or housing or other kinds of assistance. The thing I learned in preparing this sermon, and after 40 years of priesthood, I can't imagine this is news to me, but the sin of favoritism, of favoring some over others, in fact has a word which describes it as prosolepia. So if you happen to be favoring the rich, or the people like you, or the people you just like to have around, and have no concern for others, you have the sin of prosolepia. I invite you in your ruminations this week to ask yourself, I found a little bit in me at times, but the really important thing here is that James is reminding the people in that church that in fact, works are as important as faith. And I can imagine Calvin spinning in his grave as I say that. But faith without works is dead. That's what James says. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? Indeed, I've been impressed in my short time here at St. Michael's that you are quite a diverse congregation in many ways, age, gender, lifestyle, where you live, where your ancestors came from, what your skin color may be. And that diversity and the readiness to welcome new diversity is very much in keeping with what James believed and taught. You have a wonderful feeding program, and that too is very much in the spirit of James. You don't just preach about how important it is to do something for the hungry. You actually do it. And indeed, I suspect that compared to many congregations, prosolepia is not one of the serious sins of this congregation as a whole. And for that, I praise you and celebrate you. Which brings me to our gospel reading. It is a story that actually appears both in Mark and Matthew. The versions are extremely close. It happens to be Mark's version that we have read this morning. And it's a passage that gets preachers all aflutter whenever it comes up because there's some challenging material in it. We have the woman who wishes healing for her very, very sick daughter. And she approaches Jesus. And at the very outset, this is an issue because she is both a woman and a pagan, a non-Jew. And many observant Jews would have just walked on by her. But he does, at some point, begin to hear what she's saying. She's very persistent. She's down at his feet, begging him to heal her daughter. She's screaming, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of God." She calls Jesus both Lord and Son. Obviously, she's somewhat familiar with the Jewish tradition. Unfortunately, in both Gospels, initially, Jesus completely ignores her and does not speak to her. His silence gives the impression to his disciples that he's not interested in helping her. So in Matthew, they suggest that he send her away since she's annoying them because she keeps on screaming. It is doubtful that they expected him to heal the daughter. They just wanted Jesus to get rid of her. I suppose we all encounter some demanding person somewhere in our lives, at home, at work, God forbid even at church, where a part of us wants to say, just go away, don't bother me, leave me alone, don't bother my friends and my disciples. But Jesus does not send her away. Initially, he tells her that he was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. And this is why he really can't do something for a Syrophoenician woman. But she keeps demanding. And finally, he responds to her in a curious way. Matthew says that she says, "Lord, help me, heal my daughter." And Jesus says, "It's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." Most readers, if they're really thoughtful about this, realize that Jesus is basically insulting this woman. The perfect Jesus, the Jesus that never insulted anybody, is very harsh with this woman. And when he says it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs, she's essentially saying that Gentile children are dogs. Or dog-like. And I think the disciples must have been very startled, but she persisted. And he finally said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. Let it be done as you have requested." Indeed, she got her wish. He told her to go home. And with complete trust, she went home and found her daughter well again. And the gospel ends with that wonderful story of healing a man of uncertain ethnicity, given where they were up in Tyre, in the region of Lebanon today. It may well have been that he was not Jewish, but Jesus responded to the suggestion that he should heal this man. And the man was restored to both hearing and speech. I was joking with my hearing aid doctor a while ago. We were talking about putting your fingers in your ear or maybe a Q-tip and clearing some of the wax away. And I said, you know, there's this man in the gospel, and Jesus put his fingers in his ear. Maybe he was driving the wax out. Or maybe it really was a miracle.